You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Every time I talk to my agent, he's like, it's like we're at a funeral together. And he's just like, yeah, maybe there'll be some leftover potato salad when we get to the reception.
Oh my God.
You know, like every day he's just like, I don't know.
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter.
And I'm a writer.
But... Welcome to I'm a Writer, But. Today we have Rachel Yoder, the author of Night Bitch, which is her debut novel set for release in this month, July 2021, and has also been optioned for film by Annapurna with Amy Adams set to star. She is a graduate of the Iowa Nonfiction Writing Program and also holds an MFA in fiction from the University of Arizona. Her writing has been awarded with the Editor's Prize in Fiction by the Missouri Review and with notable distinctions in Best American Short Stories and Best American Non-Required Reading. She is also a founding editor of Draft, the Journal of Process. Rachel grew up in a Mennonite community in the Appalachian foothills of eastern Ohio. She now lives in Iowa City with her husband and son. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is so
I think
exciting.
We should keep singing the whole time.
I can't stop. Let's
do it.
What are you gonna read to us?
I have an excerpt from my book. It's called Night Bitch.
Woohoo!
Oh man, it's been a long day. So this is a little ditty from Night Bitch, where the main character, Night Bitch, and her small son are having lunch at a cafeteria type style.
Oh, I'm so, so excited that you're reading this.
Okay, here we go. She set the bowl of macaroni before him and cut a chicken finger into small bites, which she arranged on a napkin. She was unusually silent as she did this, distracted by her hunger and the smell of the meat. The mother may have been in some sort of animal trance, cutting the chicken finger, yes, but doing it without knowing what she was doing. She could only focus on her hunger, a hunger that filled up every space inside her until she was nearly crazed. She turned to her plate. Oh, the glory of the meatloaf, the suppleness of the muscle fibers as the pot roast fell apart. She used a fork, and then she used her hands, and then she simply allowed her face to fall upon the pile. And you could suppose this was some sort of worship, the mother with head bowed, taking the foodstuffs directly into her body. There was a purity to such an act. The boy watched with wide eyes for but a moment and then screamed with glee and did the same, plunging his face into the mac and cheese and then sitting up with a noodle stuck to one cheek, cheese on his eyelids. He clapped. The mother continued in her fugue, the feel of the meat in her throat filling her. The boy reached over to take a bite of the corn and she growled low and quiet, and he retreated to pick up the chicken tender in his mouth and shake it side to side. She gulped the meat down and moaned with the taste of it, snuffled and chomped, and then nudged the pile of corn with her nose toward her son. He picked it up with one pudgy hand, slammed it into his mouth, and closed his eyes as he chewed. She ate and ate and ate With a singular animal focus, she ate. She licked the plate clean. And when she arose, she saw that all the mothers around her had quieted. Even the businessmen were off their phones watching. She picked up her napkin and calmly wiped her face. She took a very deep breath. She would act natural, play it cool. She would not cry. She would not cry. Horrifically, she met eyes with a man at the next table over, a guy with a smart haircut and an open-collared button-down, his briefcase beside him on a chair. "Hungry," he said. Not a question, but more a verbal fist bump, a somewhat odd acknowledgement of what had just transpired.
Oh my gosh.
There we have. She doesn't quite know what's happening yet. But she's hungry. She's hungry.
I'm curious about the first section of this book. If you, did you have the whole, did you write a whole draft? Did you have that first section first? There's so much incredible momentum and just power in that first section. The whole book is that way, but really that first section is just like, oh my God, did you have that first, or did you have an entire draft? How did drafting this novel work?
Yeah, that definitely came first. And that came after 2 years of not writing a word after my son was born. And after that first section, I was kind of like, oh shit, is this it? Like, is it done? Was that it? Because it kind of like does a thing and we arrive at a moment. And it felt so, propulsive, and it just poured out of me that I kind of wondered, okay, well, did I just write like a novella, or is this really a novel? And then I kind of saw that there was more that I wanted to explore. And I did it all rather chronologically, of course, with like fits and starts. But yeah, definitely. I think the rest of the book was, while it's still like, came fairly easily, there was a lot more sort of thought that went into it, or like thinking about structure and how I can kind of make it go. And there were some false starts, but that first section, man, I had 2 years worth of ranting in me that was ready to come out. Yeah.
So you were close to the age that Night Bitch's child was about the same age as your own child at that time, or no? Wait, like, were you like close to having a 2-year-old at that time, or were you a little?
Yeah, I probably was. He might have been a little older.
Wow.
But also, I always say this, and I still believe it's true, even though I wrote a book about a mom who turns into a dog. I don't have a great imagination, so a lot of the sort of logistics or details of the book, I hew very close to my life. Also, because it was a very personal book, but I had a young kid as I was writing this book.
Wow. Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like it's amazing that you have an MFA in nonfiction and an MFA in fiction. And you're also saying, a lot of this came from my life. Like, do you feel those two things working in you as you write, or?
Oh yeah, for sure. I think getting an MFA in nonfiction made me a better fiction writer, because it made me understand sort of like the possibilities of thinking on the page and telling on the page. And because they always say when you get your fiction MFA, show, don't tell. And I was terrified of just sort of turning away from the showing and having a moment of like telling or talking. And when I sat down to write this, I was not scared of that. I really embraced that sort of essayistic impulse because I had some shit to say. And, but it felt very, also very good to have the vehicle be this fantastical story. I felt like I could have the best of both worlds and like bring them into one piece.
Yeah. Those are some of my favorite parts in the book where your character Night Bitch is just sort of ruminating on what it is to be a woman and what it is to be a mother and, how it's a trick and, and just sort of like, oh God, that, not to spoil it too much for people, but like that moment where she's talking about how unfair it is that women should be expected to be attractive, but she also feels that she should be hot, but just for herself. Is so there's just like moment after moment like that all throughout the book. And it's a fairy tale. It's fantastical, but it also feels like a manifesto in some way. Yeah. And I, you know, like I was just shaking the book in the air, like, yes, you know, like it's another thing that I really loved about it was that the child is older. So it's like, you know, there's these books that are important that, you know, about what happens to a woman directly after she gives birth and she's about to be a mother. But then there's, you know, and I think it does correspond to that 2 years, because it took me about 2 years after every child to sort of get back in to writing. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of like awakening that happens, I feel, around 2 years, where you start to notice that you have a brain. and it's a different kind of boredom. It's a different kind of desperation when you have a toddler versus when you have like a small helpless baby.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I don't know about you, and I guess I haven't really heard too many people talk about this experience, but I felt high for at least the first year of having my baby. Like oxytocin is for real. If I'm naming the drug, whatever that thing is that's in your brain, like I was so happy the first year and just like riding a cloud and would like hold my baby and look at him for hours at a time and just like get high off of like whatever was going on in my body. I loved it. And like after that sort of, you know, abated and the sleep deprivation caught up with me and the quitting my job caught up with me. And like, then I was sort of home alone with these endless hours, with a toddler. Then I was like, oh, where am I? Mm-hmm. Like, what have I gotten myself into? Did I agree to this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really was a sense of like, coming back into my like un-baby high body and trying to like understand what was going on.
Yeah. There's a me here too. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like, right.
And I mean, it even comes through in the book in so often in routine for Night Bitch, whether it's just a feeding routine, a nighttime routine where she's really not getting help from her husband, but even the stuff like going to the park, like park anxiety, like who's going to be there? Am I going to have to deal with parent X or Y? It's like that. Oh my God. I mean, I'm not a mother, but as a father of a toddler, I just was like, oh my fucking God, this all parents of toddlers should read this book. It's just, I felt indicted and was able to laugh as well throughout all that shit was just like wrecking.
Yeah. It is devastating. But one of the things that I loved was I was telling Alex after we both got to the end of the first part that feels like you could have expanded what you had and that would have been the climax, the end. Mm. But you pushed yourself into this other, because it's like, okay, motherhood works because she's given into this animal side of herself. And so this human side of herself, fuck it. It's too hard to fight for. The art is too hard to fight for. But you pushed the book into this other situation. You pushed it into triumph, I feel. And I don't think that was an easy thing to do. Did you have a sense of, you know, like, did you have a sense of the theme that you wanted or what you wanted people, mothers to get out of it at the end?
I had a sense that there was like a possibility. There was a lot of possibility if she was an artist and a mother for me to kind of like explore how those are both creative processes, you know, and like, and how they can inform each other, what one can teach about the other, how they're sort of in dialogue. And so that was sort of what propelled me further into it, because I was interested in that, what that conversation was, and I didn't know what it was yet. And I needed to know how to do that with my own art. I mean, it's a very sort of like self reflective book. Like I needed to know what Night Bitch had to tell me. I had to write the book to find out. I had to, and in doing that, like, get back to myself, get back mm-hmm. to my own creative process. Mm-hmm. So it was almost sort of like a, not self-help, but maybe like a sort of spiritual practice to just write the book. Like, it felt very important for me to finish it. And it felt very important for me to, like, take it as far as I could take it for my own, like, personal growth. I needed to know, like, the lessons of Night Bitch and of Wanda, who I wanted to know so much about. So I just had to keep going.
And you address those things that Alex is talking about, like that anxiety of other parents and finding your place there and you know, like, and like prejudging yourself through their eyes, you know? Yeah. And, but you give those parents humanity, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end, it really is like a village, like a, you know, it takes a village. It really is like, there are roles for anyone who's willing. And I just felt like that was also an important statement, because I do that to myself, and I do it in my writing when I'm talking, you know, when I'm describing these characters or these scenes. And I felt like it was cathartic in a way, you know, for Night Bitch to push to that level and, you know, find, I'm spoiling it, but find a role for Jen. And I just thought that there was so much grace in that. And like, did you have to fight through any sort of, like, now I'm asking for my own purposes, any sort of like inner cynicism, or were you always like, no, everybody's going to come along, you know, like I'm.
I think I was so lonely and alone and so isolated mm-hmm. in early motherhood. And I needed a story that gave me hope. Like mm-hmm. I desperately longed to connect with other moms. Like I desperately longed to connect with my husband. I desperately longed for some sort of meaningful connection, and it felt really impossible. And so I did it in the book. I mean, at the time it wasn't conscious really, but that's exactly what I was doing. I was like, I'm writing, I mean, this is so cliched, but I'm like writing the book I need to read. Like I wanted to understand what that story would look like. And if I could like make a hopeful story out of her situation, because I was struggling so much to make my own story hopeful. Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was a very cathartic process for me, very much so.
Rachel, you talked about pushing past that initial section and, you know, really seeing what the rest of Night Bitch's story would be. I was so curious about the section where Night Bitch is thinking of her grandma and her mother wanting to be an opera singer. That was my favorite section in the whole book. And it seemed like it really reframed so much of what came before. I was wondering if you had a recollection of how you arrived at that, because it seemed completely perfect to arrive at that point in the novel, but something that, you know, was outside the chronology of the main narrative. I was wondering if there was how difficult it was to arrive at something like that, or if that just kind of came to you.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that it did reframe something for you, because that was the section that was always sort of the booger for me. I almost wound up just deleting all of it.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I think at the time, and I still am, I was really interested, you know, I come from the Mennonites. I come from the Pennsylvania Dutch culture, and I was really interested in Pennsylvania Dutch folk medicine and sort of like the witchy part of my Mennonite ancestry. And it felt like, I don't know, like I started writing it and started thinking about, you know, all of the women who were my role models and what was kind of within reach for them, and the ways in which they were limited, and how what I was feeling might be something that many of my ancestors, female ancestors, had felt, especially in such a closed patriarchal culture. And it really was, again, cathartic to write that and sort of find that connection with that mother character, to see that, because I think Night Bitch starts to see that her mom's sort of distance was like her greatest love, her telling her to go and leave and get out of here and do it, which she always took to be this sort of brusque, push away, was actually the best she could do for her. And I just, thought a lot about how, of course, my mom and the women who are my mentors, they were doing the best they could with what they were given too. And I think it was just this has been my process of coming into midlife, is everything is getting sort of reframed. And I thought everything was so kind of clear, and I had the world figured out with my adolescent rage. I think the book wound up being this sort of unhinged, righteous rage that moves into another way that's perhaps more grounded and wise, of looking at a story and understanding a story. And that was a really wonderful process for me. And I think that required looking back, and I don't think I would have gotten there if I wouldn't have had that sort of looking back moment, into the deep past, at the deep images and the deep stories that are there.
That section, and then the paragraph, I believe it comes earlier, the "what's more unbelievable than motherhood" paragraph, where you're kind of going, where Night Bitch is kind of going through and thinking about, well, no, of course, Jesus, what's more unbelievable than that? There's such a wonderful effect on the rest of the book. I'm really glad that section survived, is what I'm saying, Rachel.
Oh, great.
Do you think it helped you? Did it help you parent your child? Or I'm just asking because to read about Night Bitch's rage and to read about how, she uses it to create herself. It's cleansing for me as a mother to see that, to read that, and to sort of my daughter was being annoying the other day, and I was like, "You're being annoying," and I was like, "Oh, that's totally fine. That's a normal human interaction. I don't have to feel guilty about that." I feel like that's Night Bitch's influence. Just like I'm,
oh yeah,
low growl at my daughter. you're pushing it, Yeah. Did it feel like a catharsis for you?
Yeah, I think at a certain point, my own rage became really counterproductive and actually began to hurt me and hurt my parenting. And I saw that, Night Bitch is my effort to take my own rage and turn it into something productive. I was like, this is going to eat me alive. It was also, you have to remember, during the Trump era, right? We're
oh my God, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every day was just, political trauma. Mm-hmm. And so there was this sense that I could sort of lose myself to the rage, or I could, sink or swim. And after 2 years of not writing, it was it's obvious, not writing is not working for me. It's obvious, writing is my outlet. It's obvious, I have something now that I really need to let out. And I also I don't have a long history with anger, and knowing what to do with it, especially coming from the Mennonites, where, anger is sort of next to violence, and we're pacifists. So we don't tread in that. We don't do anger very well. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to do anger. And so, it was just me kind of bumbling through, trying to figure out how to be angry. What do you do with it? How do you feel it? Where do you put it in your body? How does it come out of you? It's sort of learning about it as a toddler would in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So, and it's much better now. Like this book helped me work through a lot of it. And I also wanted, like, I was hoping that there would be something that came out of this book that would kind of show a way for rage to be productive, you know, mm-hmm. like how can we use it in a productive way or in a creative way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you have the name of the character as Night Bitch and the name of the book as Night Bitch early? Because it feels, I mean, it's such a powerful name and it's such a, I mean, it's such a great title for a book. It feels like, I don't know. I was just like, Jesus, did she have that right away? It's so fucking good.
Yeah. I mean, it started with that. And it's also, it's absurd too. It's like, I thought it was also like a funny joke, which is part of the project of this book, you know, was I'm like, okay, I can be angry, but it's also a joke and I can be funny too. And so that way I can kind of balance out the anger of it. But yeah, like the title came before anything really.
Oh, wow.
I love that there wasn't like an impulse to make it more polite.
One of the editors I talked to really early on was like, oh, we might need to change the title. Like before I sold the book. She's like, I might need to change the title. I'll change the name of the main character. And I was like, interesting. Okay. Like that will not work, but thank you. So I'm glad that it did get to stay in the end. Sorry to cut you off.
It's essential. It is essential. That is.
It is essential.
And you just recently finished the screenplay for it.
I did.
And what was that like?
That was also a truly intense experience. You know, written during a pandemic. Mm-hmm. My first time ever adapting my own work, which is really hard. You probably knew that, but I thought it wasn't going to be hard. and it, you know, it was very rigorous, very difficult, and made me wish I had revised the book one more time because like, you know, because I found all these, because you have to like, you know, make it a lot shorter and make every image count a lot more and really find like a tight structure for it. And so it made me, it was really like doing an incredibly rigorous revision. And I found, you know, like I did a lot more. I dove into art and the art world and just found a lot more inspiration there and wish I could have like included more specific art stuff in the book. But yeah, it is what it is. It is what it is.
It feels like two different, it feels like a good thing. It feels like the book is its thing and then the movie can be its thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so no one's going to be like, well, that didn't happen in the book. You know, it's like Night Bitch, the movie is different, you know, and also because a lot of Night Bitch is so interior because she is so alone and she is in her head, you mm-hmm. know, and so like making that into a movie must have been excruciating for you. And thankfully you have
that's like a great word.
You have a great actress who can do that. You know, she can make her face convey so much, but it must've been really hard for you to think about how to convey those things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the main challenge, right? Is when you have a book that is so incredibly internal, how in the world do you like put that on screen? So, yeah, it's a very different medium. It's just like kind of figuring out like the conventions and the tricks and all the different like ways you can get to that, but via very different pathways.
How did you learn how to do it, Rachel?
Screenwriting.
Yeah.
I took some classes back at my MFA at Arizona. And even before that, like I kind of wanted to go to film school before I ever wanted to go get my MFA, but just like logistically, it didn't make any sense. It was much easier to write a story than make a short film. So yeah, it's something I've always wanted to do. And I've, you know, had some practice in it, but had never written like a feature length script all the way through. And I think on top of that, like adaptation is a whole, you know, kind of a whole different thing than just writing an original script too, because it does have this translation. So, I mean, it was really hard, but it was also really great. Like I learned a lot, and now I have that education for whatever, you know, comes in the future.
Yeah. Were you showing drafts of it to anyone?
It was sort of crazy pants over here. Not really. I mean, my husband has a degree in film. He read some drafts of it. But it was a pretty solitary endeavor.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is impressive. Is it as funny as Night Bitch the book?
Is it as funny? Yes. Yes. I think it might really? Even be funnier.
That's what I'm so excited about, because I love horror / humor. It just somehow it works. It's like the absurdity of both come together. And those are kind of my favorite movies and my favorite books to read. And so I just feel like this book is so, I mean, this book is hilarious and sad and scary, you know, and I feel like that in the wrong hands goes terribly, but you were able, maybe it's just because Night Bitch is so authentic, you know, and so human and so animal that we just follow her everywhere she goes. But did you ever kind of worry about, did you ever like, I'm asking this personally, because the thing I'm writing right now veers wildly between like scary and funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry a lot about like, oh God, like, is this too wild?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think this book is going to be for everyone. It's a lot of what it is. And, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, there's always that worry. And I think it can easily like be a joke. And I'm always afraid of it, of the book just sort of being a joke and people discounting it as just like, oh, it's like the, like, you know, mom who turns into a dog book. It's so easy to just kind of put it in that category and then toss it off to the side. But I think, yeah, there is like an earnest. The thing is, it's like a werewolf mom book written very earnestly. So, I mean, do what you will with that. You know, like, I don't know what else. I'm just a weirdo, I guess. Like that, that's what I have to give.
No, it's so relatable. It is so relatable. Yeah, it really is so real.
Even for non-mothers, for the people who are listening. I mean, like, I think it's, you got to pick it up if you have toddlers in your life, or if you've ever read a fucking book, pick it up.
Yeah. It is so fun to read and so shocking and wonderful and funny. And it made me think of Mrs. Caliban, which I just recently read. Have you read that?
Oh my God. You had strong feelings about that, Lindsay.
I did.
I remember.
Yes.
Or was one character in particular, right? You were like fucking fired up.
I just love that. Like, is this real? Is this not real? But also I really relate to this character, this poor woman who is like, has experienced like world ending grief, mm-hmm. you know, and Night Bitch is also experiencing these like super real emotions and stuff from her past and, you know, like trying to find herself again. And this other thing is happening, you know? And, yeah, I was into it.
It's amazing to hear. I'm so glad. Yeah.
What are you doing now?
What am I doing now? I'm just getting ready for the book launch. And
oh, that's all.
That, you know, just doing that.
How does that feel? Like, how do you feel right now?
I feel okay. I'm trying to make a practice of taking the excitement and putting it in my body in a nice, solid way, as opposed to letting it sort of become corrupted and turn into like anxiety and neuroticism. So just like trying to stay in my Night Bitch, so to speak, like just,
yeah,
this is, you know, this is going to be great. I'm going to, it's the same thing. Like I'm going to approach like the book launch with like excitement and vulnerability and earnestness, like much in the same way I approach the book. Because like if the pandemic has taught me anything, it's like, that's what I'm doing here. I'm just trying to have like an authentic, genuine experience. So that's happening. I don't know what comes next. Like in terms writing again seems very far away, but I hope it's closer than it seems, you know, because I do have, it would feel so great to start on something new. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably so hard with everything you've got in the air right now.
I can't imagine.
Yeah. You've probably got like a gauntlet coming your way, right? Like interviews and events and.
Yeah. I mean, everything's still a little, in terms of events, it's a little slow still because of, you know, COVID and my publisher isn't supporting in-person events, but I still have a few things I've put together and I'm just trying not to overachieve because again, COVID is one of the lessons of the pandemic. Like there's no need to kind of kill myself promoting the book. So I'm trying to like do what's fun and knowing that like the book has a long life, like there'll be a paperback next year and there will most likely be a film. So there's going to be a lot and I don't have to cram it all in like July and August. So, but yeah, I mean, this is, you are hearing me at my calmest. I do not always sound like this. So,
do you have like a celebration planned or anything you're going to do to sort of mark the moment or have you already done that?
I mean, I do have an in-person event here in Iowa City, which feels really exciting because it'll be the first time I'm like seeing people again.
Yes.
And it's like outdoors and it's like Prairie Lights, my favorite bookstore on earth are sponsoring it. And I'm really excited for that. Like, I just want to see people's faces and be happy with my community. That feels really exciting to me.
Awesome.
Man, you are so smart about all of this. And I think it's going to make it a very pleasant experience because
fingers crossed.
Yes. Yes. I love it. Will you turn into a dog at your event?
Ooh.
I'll drive there if you are.
And what kind of dog?
I cannot reveal the answer to that question in any way. So I guess you'll just have to like come and see for yourself.
You got to have beef tartare at the event.
Oh my God.
Rachel, are you a big meat eater?
I am not. No, I'm not even a big dog. I'm a cat person.
God. Surprise of the whole episode.
I love cats. I'm not a big, I haven't had a pet dog since I was a kid. And I'm not a big fan of meat. So I don't know.
I love it. I just love how you just let Night Bitch go. I just love, I mean, that's like, for me, that's like a once in a lifetime thing and you did it. And it is so thrilling.
Lindsay, you're working on something scary and funny. Mm.
I am rewriting from word one, the novel that was out on submission in April or May.
Oh my God. Was it that long ago already?
I think so. Yeah. May.
Oh my God.
Around there. And,
you guys are so productive, but go on. God.
Well, I live in constant fear and anxiety. But, so it got passed and the thing about passes is you'll hear from the editors about how much they love you and how much they love the novel and how great it is and how brilliant you are, but it's just not the right one. So I've just been like Night Bitch channeling my rage into creation. And it's actually been really fun. I've just been like doing it. I don't know.
You've been cranking. You have been absolutely cranking.
Yeah. I have almost 70,000 words that I've written since May or something. I don't know, but
so awesome.
But we'll see. That's what I'm working on right now.
Wow. I mean, that is always, just to echo Alex, I don't know your process or your life or anything, but I always have the sense that you are cranking. Like that is like the vibe I get from you. And that's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's just like you discovered, like we have to do something or I'm just not a good mom. Like I'm constantly, if I haven't written, I'm always thinking, when am I going to write today? I need to write, you know? Mm-hmm.
So, And I was talking to my best friend who is not a writer at all. And she said something really profound for moms or dads, but she was talking about like after she had, before she had her first kid, she was a long distance runner. She told her husband, I'm not ever going to stop running. I just want you to know that. He's like, okay. Oh, wow. And so then she had her baby and she didn't run for a few weeks, but it was a very short amount of time. And she turned to him one day and she's like, I'm going for a run now. Here's the baby. And she went for a run and he called her on the run. Oh. He was like, the baby's crying.
Oh, she's
like,
God.
I told you I'm never giving up running and you need to figure it out and I'll be home after my run. And she's like, that's what everyone has to do in parent. Like you have to find the thing that you need to be yourself before the baby even comes, you know, like identify the thing. And then like, you just have to like hold on to it.
How fucking wise is she? Oh my God.
Yeah. Right. I was like, Jesus. Wow. Could you have told me this like 8 years ago?
That would have been a lot more helpful. It is so true. And in a way it's like outlining yourself for your children. Like I think about boundaries a lot because your children will just like fuck your boundaries up because they have to, right? But if you insist on a few things, it's just better for everyone. And I feel like those kinds of things like show you as who you are and not just as their mom, which I think is really crucial for them to understand, you know?
For sure. It shows them how to be a person, person when they grow up too. Because they're like, oh yeah, I have to take care of myself. I have to like,
and there's always this awkward moment in your childhood where you do, you know, like I feel like when my parents got divorced, I saw them, oh, okay, they're human. And I wish I had known that before. Because it does, it teaches you how to be, it teaches you that it's okay to be fucked up, you know, like, and to make mistakes and own your mistakes. I can remember after Parker was born trying to force it. Parker's my first. And after, like, you know, like Ben taking him one day to his friend's house so that I could have a few hours to write. And I just put my forehead on the table and was like, I am so fucking tired. I have nothing to say. But eventually it comes and you have to give it space. Even if you're setting your alarm for 4:57.
Oh my God.
Waking up and writing in bed so you don't wake the rest of the house up.
Oh my God.
It works.
Hardcore.
It works. I feel like there's people who wake up earlier than that, you know, and get it done. Parents are hardcore. My God, you know, like if there's anyone who's like great at eating shit, it is parents, you know, and that is a crucial life skill. On that note, we are going to release you to go out into the night.
That's what I've been waiting for. Awesome.
I would make us all howl, but I don't think my microphone would like that. So let's just pretend that it happened.
Sure, we'll do that.
It was amazing.
Rachel, this book is incredible and we love you and we're so excited for you. And everybody,
thanks, Rachel.
Pre-order it, read it, and rate and review.
I don't know. I can't, she was so calm. I can't imagine what her life is actually like. I mean, if I had a book that was coming out that was getting this much attention and was being made into a movie by maybe the best actress going, I would not be calm. I wouldn't even be able to fake calm.
I would be such an asshole.
I would.
And that's why I don't deserve it yet.
God, you know what the important word is in that last sentence is yet.
I'll get there one day.
Oh my God.
It is true though. I mean, like she's been writing for years and she, you know, she has those two degrees and she's, you know, she was working in a literature program. She knows, you know, like she was working. And Rachel, I'm sorry if I got this wrong, but I feel like she was also helping with the Mission Creek festival, or she was like a major. She knows.
Well, let's just say none of that happened. Let's say like none of, like she wrote a great book. And so like, regardless of like all the time she put in, it's just like, it makes sense because the book is good, you know, like really good. And I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, totally 100% she was putting in time, but like, even if she wasn't, it's like the book's fucking great. So
I just mean like when you've been doing it for that long, you have the scar.
Oh,
tissue.
I see.
You
totally,
have the scar
totally.
Tissue.
100% totally. So now I'm tracking. Yeah.
Yeah, you're able to just like accept what's coming your way and like be in the moment. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know, it's beautiful the way that she's talking about it. And
I agree. Yeah.
I hope that stays with her. because it's such a great book, so fun to read. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like I said, just like moment after moment where you're just like, yes, that's exactly how I feel. And why did, you know, like I never thought I could write about that. Mm-hmm. So it's great. I'm excited for people to read it.
Definitely.
What the hell else?
What the hell else? What the hell else? Well, I've been reading Lacey Crawford's book.
Yes. Oh my God.
God damn.
It's wild because that book, like it deals with something so devastating and so heavy. Yes. But, and I think I remember Rebecca Mackay saying this on Twitter, that it reads like a college novel. It reads like a campus novel, even though it is all completely true. And she just has like a deftness and a grace about the way that,
oh my God, I mean,
handles these things.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you get the awful like rape pretty much immediately in the book. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what you get is Lacey's unbelievable understanding of who she was at that time in her life, how it impacted the woman she became, how the educational environment that she was in at the time influenced the way the rape was handled. And mm-hmm. I mean, immediately there's a kind of an immediate mm-hmm. And constant reframing throughout the book that is kind of takes your breath away, the intelligence, to be honest.
Yeah. Yep. I know. She is like the smartest person. Every time she tweets, I'm like, oh, she's so smart. She's just wonderful. And yeah, so we get to talk to her this week.
Yeah.
And that episode will be dropping soon.
Yes.
And I started, I'm reading a book that she recommended called What Happened to Paula, which is a true crime. But also, I mean, it's not a true crime because it's sort of just about girlhood and womanhood. Mm. And I'm like, I don't know, 50 to 70 pages in.
You had Paula's story. What was it? Peggy Paula? What was that?
Peggy Paula. Three things you need to know about Peggy Paula.
That's right.
Good old Peggy Paula. May her legend live forever. But yeah, anyway, that's been great. And I'm listening to Alana Massad's book.
Oh, cool.
Because we're going to talk to her down the line as well.
I was excited for that one because it's purple. I was like, ah, it's a good purple book.
That's a good sign.
That's a good purple
book.
It has
a great font.
Yes, it does. It does.
It also, so all three of these books we've been talking about, mm-hmm. Notes on a Silencing, What Happened to Paula, and My Mother's Lovers, all open with devastating horrible things happening.
Really?
Except My Mother's Lovers is fiction. All my mother's lovers, I think that's what it's called. Let me make sure. All My Mother's Lovers.
Can I tell you something fucked up?
Of course.
So as we were talking there at the end, I pulled up Amy Adams Wikipedia because I was like, I think she's a Coloradoan, and she was raised in Castle Rock, so I'm going to claim her as a Coloradoan. But then
Castle Rock is in Colorado?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Oh, I was thinking Castle Rock, Maine.
I mean, maybe both. It's where we went to the outlet malls is Castle
Hell
Rock.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Go to the lids there. Come on. But she was born on August 20th. And if you're a sicko like me, you just thought of Todd Helton right away. So Amy Adams, Todd Helton, and Miranda Popke, same birthday. Just wanted to really get that in this episode.
Who's Todd who?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Just an absolutely unbelievable defensive first baseman.
I mean, I didn't know who Todd Helton was.
Ben hates Todd Helton. Ben's going to say.
I'm not going to say what Ben said. Mm-mm. Nope.
Yeah,
I'm not saying
it. I know what
it.
Ben said.
Nope.
No, we're cutting it.
I believe in peace and love. I'm not going to say it. Show me a
boring baseball player. Did he say that when he got a DUI, it was because he was drinking cups of wine? Because that's what he said.
He said, wow, I'm so glad Alex taught you that. That's what he said.
I love Ben. I've always loved Ben. He knows that.
That's a word for it. That's a word. Miranda Popke really also, awesome. You said?
Yeah, August 20th.
Oh, God. She's such a genius. Okay. I'm with you.
That's all I got. You got anything weird?
yesterday when I picked up my son from drum camp, my five-year-old, his teacher goes, yeah, he has a lot of interests.
Oh my God.
And I was like, well, thank you. And he's like, yeah, all at once.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay.
I can see your middle son being a drummer. I mean, it's just, I can totally see it.
Yeah. Yeah. The guy was like, he's interested in drums. He's interested in philosophy.
Wow.
And I was like, okay. All right. So there you go. Future writer, maybe.
Wow.
Middle children. They got a lot to say. I don't know. I'm a middle child.
Okay.
There you go. Done and done.
All right. I guess we did it.
All right. See you later.
Hey, bye.
I'm a Writer But is recorded by Alex Higley and me, Lindsay Hunter, in our respective basements. Editing by Lindsay Hunter. Music by Max Loop.